Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Okay, let's unpack this. We're diving into something, well, absolutely foundational to modern life, something most of us probably only think about when it's gone, the electric grid. Mm-hmm. It's this incredible, sprawling network, much of it built back in the 60s and 70s, yet our entire way of life relies on it being available like 100% of the time. When it fails, it's way more than just the lights going out.
That's exactly right. It underpins, well, everything. Communication, transport, healthcare, the whole economy. One source, a former energy exec, called it the network of all networks. Mm-hmm. Reliability is just non-negotiable.
And right now, this vital kind of aging system is facing these immense new pressures and a big one, the rise of AI. Yeah. You've heard AI needs a lot of power, right? Mm. We're talking data centers using as much energy as small cities. The sources make it pretty clear that AI companies are already finding it hard to get the power they need.
It's a real challenge.
And ensuring they can get that power here in the U.S. is framed as a national imperative, you know, competition with China and all that.
The demand is certainly staggering, and it's only going up. But what's really fascinating, looking at the materials, is that AI isn't just the problem here.
Yeah.
It's also being looked at and even used as a potential solution.
Exactly. So that's our mission for this deep dive. We're going to explore this this dual relationship, the massive energy demands AI puts on the U.S. grid, the risks, the opportunities, and how AI is already being used to try and manage things.
Right. And then we'll switch gears a bit. We need to get into a really interesting, maybe more fundamental change happening inside AI itself, a new way AI models are starting to think, which changes the whole compute picture and, well, what they can do and who can use them.
Sounds like a plan. It's all connected to the energy appetite and how these things actually work.
Totally. It's about understanding both sides. Okay, so AI in the grid first. As you said, the foundation is this aging U.S. infrastructure.
Mid to late 20th century, mostly. And despite that age, its role is just, well, critical. That near-perfect availability isn't just nice to have, it's essential. And then, boom, AI's energy needs arrive. The sources really stress how significant these data centers are becoming. It's not just running servers, it's powering them, cooling them. It's a colossal amount of energy.
Huge amounts. And the difficulty AI companies are having lining up that power supply, it's a real bottleneck.
Yeah.
Framed very much as a strategic issue, like you said. National competitiveness.
Which creates that paradox, doesn't it? AI causes this huge demand, but it also holds this promise for the grid itself.
Exactly. The potential is there for AI to help create an energy future that's, you know, more resilient, maybe more efficient, possibly even cheaper for customers down the line.
And this isn't just theory anymore, right? Grid operators are already doing this.
They are. They're using AI for things like monitoring transmission lines, trying to spot problems before they cause an outage, isolating faults really quickly when something does go wrong, analyzing just tons of real-time data.
That real-time analysis seems key.
Oh, absolutely. It lets operators predict supply and demand swings much faster and more accurately than, well, than humans can across such a huge system. Mm-hmm. AI can help make adjustments, like second by second.
Wow.
Which is crucial for balancing everything, keeping it stable, especially with more renewables like solar and wind coming online, which are, you know, more variable.
Okay, so one of the sources, a RAND working paper, actually looked at this quite specifically. They used simulations, European data from a really cold week, right?
Yeah, a stressful period for the grid.
Yeah.
They modeled adding AI to different parts of the operation to see what happened.
And what did they find?
Well, they looked at a couple of specific applications. One was basically cruise control for big buildings, automatically tweaking heating and cooling to cut demand when the grid was stressed. Load reduction, they call it.
And did that work?
It's pretty effective in the simulation, yeah. It more than doubled the energy reserves they had available and cut average operating costs by around 10%.
10% just from smarter building controls. That's significant.
It is. Then they looked at load shifting, trying to smooth out demand peaks by delaying non-critical energy use.
Like running dishwashers overnight, that kind of thing?
Sort of, yeah, but on a bigger scale.
Yeah.
Often automated. That helped with reserves and smoothed out the demand curve. But interestingly, it didn't really affect the overall prices much in their model.
Huh. Okay. And there was one that didn't do much.
Right. They modeled automatic control of wind turbines. That specific AI application showed almost no savings in their simulation. So it suggests, you know, not every AI application is a silver bullet. Context really matters.
Okay. So definitely potential there, especially in managing demand. But putting complex AI into critical infrastructure like the power grid, that has to come with new risks.
Oh, absolutely. The most obvious one is cyber attacks. An AI-controlled grid is a new, potentially very attractive target.
You're right.
But the sources also worry about the AI itself. What if it just does something weird, makes decisions that are confusing or unexpected or even harmful?
That's the black box problem, isn't it? You see the output, but you don't know why the AI decided that.
Exactly. And on the grid. That's really worrying. If AI causes an outage or destabilizes things and the human operators can't figure out its logic, fixing it gets incredibly hard. Could mean longer, wider blackouts.
And there are ethical questions too, right? Could an AI just focused on efficiency make unfair decisions?
That's a concern raised, yeah. Could it, say, prioritize power to more efficient buildings during a crunch, ignoring human needs in less efficient homes? It lacks that human judgment, that sense of fairness.
And what about curveballs, things the AI wasn't trained on?
Like natural disasters, sudden major equipment failure, stuff like that. If the AI hits a scenario totally outside its training data, its response could be unpredictable, erratic even, right when you need stability most.
This is where that Mann study had that really interesting kind of surprising finding. They didn't just look at one AI working alone.
No, they simulated more and more grid operators adopting these AI tools. And as AI use increased, something unexpected happened.
What was that?
Overall, grid performance in the simulation actually started to dip at first.
It got worse. How?
Well, the AI-enabled operators were making faster, optimized decisions. But sometimes, based on logic, the human operators, the ones not using AI yet, couldn't anticipate or react to properly. It sort of threw off the coordination.
Wow. So adding AI actually made things less stable initially because the humans couldn't keep up or understand. The quote said, performance slipped until a critical mass of AI-enabled operators begins to take hold. That sounds like a potentially messy transition.
It really highlights the need for coordination, for understanding across the whole system as this rolls out. The RAND researchers concluded basically that AI can help, but it absolutely needs active, capable humans overseeing it. Humans who understand what it's doing.
And you can see the pressure on companies to deploy this stuff, you know, cut costs, boost efficiency. The sources really emphasize they need to fully grasp what they're putting out there before it goes live on the grid.
Exactly. Understand the failure modes, how different AI systems might interact. It needs careful management. There were recommendations, like regulators setting up sandboxes for testing.
Controlled environments, yeah.
Right. Rigorous testing before it goes wide. And power companies need to be transparent, report AI use, be open about their plans.
And the point was made, this needs buy-in, careful handling from policymakers, from the public too. That energy executive's perspective was interesting. AI can do a lot of good, predict problems, manage renewables.
Huge potential, yes. But they also warned, you know, history shows what happens when tech or markets outrun regulation, California blackouts, Enron. The goal is to fix the grid, make it better, without breaking anything, especially with these new massive data center demands adding pressure.
Okay, so that's the grid side. AI is this huge energy user, creating pressure, but also a potential tool, albeit a risky one, needing careful oversight. Now, let's connect this to that second piece, the shift in how AI itself is starting to process information, how it thinks. This feels deeply tied in.
It absolutely is. This centers on what people are calling reasoning models and this idea of test-time compute. The basic shift is this. These models aren't just spitting out an instant answer based on training anymore.
Okay.
They're taking time while you're using them during inference to actually work through the problem, like explicit step-by-step reasoning.
So it's less like pattern matching and more like active problem solving in the moment, almost thinking out loud internally.
That's a good way to put it. They might generate intermediate steps, explore different options, maybe evaluate potential solutions before giving you the final answer. And this isn't instant. It gets to take seconds, even minutes sometimes.
The minutes? Wow.
And behind the scenes, it might involve generating a huge amount of internal text pages worth. Maybe that gets condensed down into that final concise response.
That's a pretty big evolution in how they operate. The source framed it as, what, evolution, not revolution, but with potentially massive cumulative impact.
Exactly. It's gradual, but it changes the mechanics. And it changes how we think about compute power in AI. Historically, the big focus was all on the massive compute needed for training those huge models.
Right. The training cost millions, took months. But now, this test time compute, the power needed just to run the model for a query that's becoming a critical factor, too.
It is. It's an additional variable that shapes the model's capability.
Mm-hmm.
So improving AI isn't just about bigger training runs anymore. It's also about what happens after training, during use. It adds complexity, more levers to pull to get better results.
So you can take a model that's already trained and make it smarter somehow.
Yes. After the main training, you can use techniques like reinforcement learning to specifically teach it better reasoning skills. And crucially, you can just give it more thinking time when it's working on a problem, allocate more test time compute to that specific query.
So the same base model could perform better on a hard task if you just let it run longer, essentially.
That's the idea. More time, more computational power dedicated to that single inference allows it to deliberate more deeply, potentially reaching a better solution.
Okay, the source laid out six implications of this. Let's walk through those. First one, accelerating innovation.
Right. This changes the game for AI teams. Improving reasoning post-training or just allowing more compute time per query is way faster and cheaper than retraining a whole giant model from scratch.
Which costs millions and takes ages on huge chip clusters.
Exactly. So this faster, cheaper iteration cycle, it could let more people get involved, maybe researchers outside the biggest labs. It might speed up overall progress, maybe even narrow the gap between the absolute top models and the next tier down.
Potentially democratizing it a bit.
To some extent, yeah. Though the source also notes, the absolute cutting edge is still being pushed by massive pre-training efforts that need resources most don't have, since Frontier keeps moving out.
And it mentioned the fastest gains seem to be in areas like math and coding.
That makes sense, right? Because you have clear right or wrong answers. It's easy to check if the AI's reasoning worked. Provides a strong feedback signal for improvement. Plus, there's that potential feedback loop AI engineers using better AI tools to build even better AI tools.
Okay. Second implication, diffusion and advantage. How does that play out?
Well, it helps both the leaders and the followers, in a way. Smaller models can achieve pretty sophisticated reasoning, maybe reaching capabilities that used to need the biggest models, just by using these post-training techniques or getting more thinking time.
So it lowers the bar for reaching a certain performance level?
Kind of, yeah. But the big labs aren't standing still. They can apply these same reasoning tricks to their newest, biggest models, pushing the state of the art even further. So the absolute performance gap might remain, but maybe yesterday's cutting edge becomes more accessible.
Got it. Third implication, tiered access. This sounds like paying for different levels of AI smartness.
That's pretty much it. Since test time compute is adjustable, the same base model could offer different tiers of performance. You could allocate just a little compute for a quick, basic answer, or a lot more for deep thinking on a complex problem.
Like the pro versions we see now, but tied directly to compute per query.
Exactly. And the source gave a wild example, getting top scores on a really tough reasoning benchmark.
The OpenAI O3 one?
Yeah, that one. It apparently needed something like 10,000 high-end NVIDIA H100 chips.
10,000 chips.
Running for about 10 minutes just to solve one complex task instance. And in that time, the model generated millions of internal tokens, basically, just churning through reasoning steps.
Millions of tokens for one answer. That really drives home the cost of that deep reasoning.
It absolutely does. It shows why those top-tier AI services might even be losing money per query. The infrastructure cost for that kind of deep thinking is immense. It likely means those really compute-heavy reasoning tasks will stay expensive, limited to those who can afford it.
Which connects right to the fourth implication. Deployment compute isn't just about how many AIs you run, but how smart each one can be.
Precisely. Deployment used to be mostly about scaling, handling lots of users. Now, the amount of compute you have available for deployment also dictates the level of intelligence you can offer per user by controlling that test time compute.
So access to compute becomes even more strategically important, not just for training, but for actually using the smartest AI.
Definitely. And that has geopolitical and economic weight. Countries or companies with the most compute aren't just deploying more AI. They might be deploying smarter AI on a per-instance basis. Basic AI might spread widely, but the most advanced reasoning that could concentrate where the compute power is.
Okay, fifth point. A potential synthetic data flywheel. What's that about?
The idea here is that to train these advanced reasoning skills, AI models might increasingly rely on reasoning data generated by other AIs.
So AI learning from AI's thinking process.
Kind of, yeah. The outputs and, crucially, the steps taken by one generation of reasoning models could become the training data for the next generation. This could create a self-improvement loop, accelerating how quickly these capabilities develop.
But the source also suggested this special reasoning data might be hard to keep proprietary.
Right. When companies show off impressive reasoning, they often share examples of how the AI got there, the chain of thought. That data itself is valuable for training others. So it might spread, potentially helping other models catch up faster over time.
And the last implication, number six, policy and information asymmetry. This sounds tricky.
It's a huge challenge. The nitty-gritty technical details of how these reasoning models work, their limitations, their potential failure points, that's often locked up as trade secrets by the companies building them.
So policymakers trying to grapple with this, maybe regulate it, especially for critical stuff like the grid, they're flying a bit blind compared to the developers?
Pretty much. There's a significant information gap. It makes it really hard for policy to keep pace with the tech and to make informed decisions about safety, risk, responsible use, especially in these high-stakes areas.
Okay, let's try and pull these threads together then. We've got AI's massive growth, driving huge energy demands, stressing our essential aging grid.
Right.
But AI is also being offered up as a potential, if risky, tool to manage that same grid.
A double-edged sword there.
Definitely. And then within AI itself, there's this fundamental shift where how it computes taking time using dedicated thinking compute is becoming key to its power, driving up its energy needs for complex tasks, but also changing who can access the most advanced capabilities.
And these two stories are deeply linked. AI's energy hunger is partly fueled by these more compute-intensive reasoning methods.
Mm.
And deploying that kind of AI onto something like the grid, well, it demands a really deep understanding of how it works, its limits, its risks, including that potential black box reasoning.
And why does this deep dive matter directly to you, the listener? Because while this isn't abstract stuff, it impacts the basic infrastructure powering your life, the cost, the reliability of your energy.
Mm-hmm. Keeps lights on, devices charged, services running.
And it shapes the AI tools you're probably already using or will encounter soon, how smart they are, how accessible, maybe even how safe they are, especially when integrated into critical systems.
The complexity here, both in energy and AI, it demands really careful thought.
It's a balancing act, isn't it? Between pushing forward with powerful technology and ensuring we integrate it safely and thoughtfully.
So we've looked at AI's dual role with energy, big problem, potential solution, and this fascinating evolution in AI's own thinking, where compute time equals capability.
A lot to digest there. It really is. And it leaves us with this question to chew on. Given this really tight interdependent loop between AI's power needs and its evolving compute-heavy abilities, and knowing the risks of putting complex, maybe opaque AI into critical infrastructure, how should we as a society actually navigate this? How do we balance speeding up AI progress with the absolute need to ensure it's integrated safely, thoughtfully, and resiliently into our world?